Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
So glad you could be with us for this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. With me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. Today we wrap up our several weeks-long study of the book Saints, the Standard of Truth, a history book published by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in 2018. And we're going to end our study with the incidences that lead up to the death of Joseph Smith in Carthage, Illinois. And the way this goes, according to the book, and it's quite accurate in what it says, that there were some dissenters, some people that were very upset with some of the behavior and the teachings of Joseph Smith, and so they were going to expose him for the abuser of power that they felt that he was. This was going to be published in a newspaper called the Nauvoo Expositor. And on page 531, it says that it was going to be a newspaper that would give, as they put it, quote, a full, candid, and succinct statement of facts as they really exist in the city of Nauvoo. There were seven guys involved in this, and they were very close to Joseph Smith at one time, but they had felt that Joseph Smith had certainly abused his power. The book mentions on page 532 that at this time, opposition to Joseph intensified. And then you go to page 533, it says that as William Law promised, and William Law is behind the publishing of the Nauvoo Expositor, it says, the Nauvoo Expositor appeared on Nauvoo streets in early June. Actually, it was June 7th, 1844. Quote, we are earnestly seeking to explode the vicious principles of Joseph Smith, end quote, it declared in its preamble, which we verily know are not accordant and consonant with the principles of Jesus Christ and the apostles.
It continues on page 534. In the newspaper, William and his followers insisted that Joseph had strayed from the restored gospel by introducing the endowment, practicing plural marriage, and teaching new doctrine about exaltation and the nature of God. They also warned the county citizens that the saints' political power was rising. They condemned Joseph's blurring of the roles of church and state and denounced his candidacy for the presidency.
Well, let's talk about this, Eric, because the accusations that were raised in this newspaper were absolutely correct. He did introduce the endowment, the temple endowment. He was practicing plural marriage, and he was, in fact, teaching new doctrine about exaltation or godhood and the nature of God. This, of course, would go back to the King Follett discourse that Smith taught.
Maybe the complaint is not what they were saying, but how they were saying it. And so because they're the opposition and criticizing Joseph Smith for these things that were true, that might have been more of what their complaint is about.
You could be right on that, because we've had many Mormons criticize us. It's not so much they say for what we say, it's how they think we're saying it, which I still don't understand that either, but we're just trying to be as factual as possible. And I think the complaints that were being leveled in the Nauvoo Expositor were spot on. Now, they may have felt that some of it was exaggerated, but listen to this. When it says that they condemned Joseph's blurring of the roles of church and state and denounced his candidacy for the presidency, why would that upset Joseph Smith? He announces his candidacy publicly. Don't you think as a candidate for the presidency, you're going to want to get that out there so people can eventually vote for you? But what was Joseph Smith's reaction to this?
It says, the day after the paper appeared, Joseph convened the Nauvoo City Council to discuss what to do about the expositor. Many of the saints' neighbors were already hostile to the church, and he worried that the expositor would provoke them to violence. Quote, it is not safe that such things should exist on account of the mob spirit which they tend to produce, end quote.
Now, I think this is a classic example, another classic example, of Joseph Smith not using very good judgment. We're getting the hint here that he thinks that perhaps to destroy the Nauvoo Expositor is somehow going to alleviate violence. You would think that if you're going to destroy a printing press, you're not only trying to cover up any potential criticisms that could be printed about you, but you're going at the heart of the First Amendment of the Constitution. That's not going to upset people, perhaps even to violence. I would think it would. And what's really kind of strange about this is even though it includes this worry that Joseph Smith had about the expositor provoking people to violence, if you turn the page to page 536, it speaks of Thomas Sharp, who was a newspaper man who was very critical of Joseph Smith. It says, the next day, Thomas Sharp reported the destruction of the press in an extra edition of his newspaper, War and Extermination is Inevitable. Citizens arise, one and all, he wrote. We have no time for comment. Every man will make his own. Let it be made with powder and ball.
For supposedly being a prophet of God, he doesn't seem to really get the strategy of what he did was going to infuriate people rather than to placate them.
Yeah, and the book, after it talks about Smith thinking that the expositor would provoke people to violence, and therefore, as it says, it is not safe that such things should exist, I have to ask this question because it talks about John Taylor on page 535, who is the editor of the Times and Seasons. What does it say there?
John valued a free press and free speech, but both he and Joseph believed they had a constitutional right to protect themselves against libel. Destroying the expositor and his press would be controversial, but they believed the laws permitted them to do it legally.
Now, why do you think it would say that destroying the expositor and its press would be controversial? I think it's pretty clear here. When it says that Joseph believed that he had a constitutional right to protect themselves against libel, certainly, he does have a constitutional right to protect himself against libel. But what is the means of protecting yourself? It's called a lawsuit, folks. You take the people who you think are lying about you and you sue them in a court of law. The Constitution certainly does not give any indication whatsoever that you can go and destroy a printing press that happens to be used in order to criticize you. And then it goes on to discuss William Phelps.
William Phelps told the council that he had reviewed the United States Constitution, the Nauvoo City Charter, and the laws of the land. In his mind, the city was fully and legally justified to declare the press a nuisance and destroy it immediately. The council voted to destroy the press, and Joseph sent orders to the city marshal to carry out the measure.
So Joseph Smith was personally involved in the destruction of this printing press that was printing a publication that criticized him. Here's what troubles me, though. William Phelps, it says, told the council that he had reviewed the United States Constitution, the Nauvoo City Charter, and the laws of the land, and in his mind, the city was fully and legally justified to declare the press a nuisance and destroy it immediately. Eric, where do you think in the United States Constitution he would have ever gotten the idea that you can destroy a printing press that is printing critical things about an individual?
That certainly goes against the idea of a free press.
You would think so. I mean, does anybody do that nowadays? When we look at all the fake news that is going on, you would think there would be lots of reasons to destroy certain people's presses. But that's not legal. And I don't think the Constitution was justifying it even at that time.
But you have to remember, Nauvoo is being run by the Mormons, and so maybe there is something in there that might have given him the idea that it would be okay, as many small towns sometimes think that their rules would supersede anything that the United States government would put on them.
Yeah, I think you're right. You would have to probably look to something within the Nauvoo City Charter. And when it says the laws of the land, that becomes a little bit vague. What laws of the land are you talking about? Now, from what I understand, Dallin Oaks, who's a member of the First Presidency in the LDS Church, his background is in law. And he comments on this. And I remember Dallin Oaks one time saying it would be kind of difficult, and I'm paraphrasing, difficult to justify Joseph Smith's destroying of the press. Although he seemed to think, if I understand correctly, that it would have been okay to destroy what the press had printed, therefore the printed pages. But to break in, and this is what happens, because at the bottom of the page it says, that evening, the Nauvoo Marshal arrived at the expositor office with about 100 men. They broke into the shop with a sledgehammer, dragging the printing press into the street and smashed it into pieces. Well, first of all, would you consider breaking into a person's business to be legal? I would say, no, not at all. And then you run into the questionable part about dragging the printing press out into the street and then smashing it to pieces. This is what leads eventually to Joseph Smith's death. So while he thinks destroying this press might alleviate violence, it actually provokes violence to the level that Joseph Smith is going to eventually be killed. Joseph Smith ends up going to Carthage, Illinois, where he turns himself in to the local constable. Instead of being charged for riot, however, he eventually is going to be charged with treason, a much more serious offense. And what happens is while Joseph Smith is incarcerated at the Carthage jail, the jail is attacked by a mob who had darkened their faces using gunpowder and mud. Joseph Smith, it admits in this book, had a smuggled pistol. He had been visited by a man by the name of Cyrus Wheelock, and he was given a smuggled pistol. Another pistol was given to Joseph Smith and his brother by a guy by the name of Fulmer. The book is honest enough to admit that Joseph Smith uses this pistol. It was an Ethan Allen pepper box, which is on display at the History Museum in downtown Salt Lake City. I was told that the pistol that is on display right now is the actual pistol, even though that is not the pistol that was on display for years prior to the renovation of the History Museum. So the Mormons don't hide this, even though we've come across a number of Mormons who have doubted that Joseph Smith ever used a gun to defend himself. But the fact remains that Joseph Smith was attacked by this mob. The book admits that he fires the gun into the mob, and then eventually he is killed by this mob. I give the book credit for admitting to the gun, but yet the documentary History of the Church that the church used for years admitted that as well in Volume 7, so that's not new. It does mention how Joseph's revolver misfired two or three times. So here we have Smith firing multiple times, so it sounds like he's trying to do bodily harm against his attackers. But then it ends with this. Suddenly Joseph dropped his revolver to the floor and darted for the window. As he straddled the windowsill, two balls struck his back. Another ball hurtled through the window and pierced him below the heart. His last words were what?
"Oh, Lord, my God," he cried. His body lurched forward, and he pitched headfirst out the window.
And as it says at the end of this chapter, chapter 44, Joseph Smith, the prophet and seer of the Lord, was dead.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. When sharing your faith with a Latter-day Saint, it helps to know what their church has taught on several basic topics. For this reason, Mormonism Research Ministry has provided its Crash Course Mormonism. Crash Course Mormonism includes concise articles highlighting what LDS leaders and church manuals have taught on issues that will probably come up in a typical conversation. You can find these informative articles at CrashCourseMormonism.com. That's CrashCourseMormonism.com.